A U.S. citizen dies in the Middle East. A drunken guy at a casino punches his girlfriend. These events would not in and of themselves be particularly noteworthy or produce headlines in our time of Middle East conflict and violence closer to home in America, including domestic violence. But when these events are captured on video, it transforms them. And this is something the public beheaders of ISIS understood very well, as they have effectively used their barbaric video taunts of the West to inflame a global war. We shall see if they can survive the coming military onslaught. And certainly Ray Rice, his wife Jenna, and the NFL all understand the power of video right now in transforming events in our time when images can be seen by tens of millions in an instant. Jonah Berger is professor at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business. He's the author of Contagious, Why Things Catch On. Welcome, Professor.
Thanks for having me.
So from the old medium is the message moment, we seem now to have evolved to the age of the video is the event. How do you think about these things that have happened? Two very, very different events, but the video has definitely distorted and changed both of them.
They're two very different events, but the similarity is the power of video to shape our emotion. If you read something on paper or even you hear something, but you don't have visual pictures, it's just not the same. Actually seeing these visual events unfold in front of us are much more likely to arouse our emotions and lead us to pass things on.
And in the case of ISIS's beheading videos, you know, the irony is there are a lot of people who have seen them because they were available, particularly the Foley video was available before it was taken down. There are policies now of media organizations whether to share them or not. But now it's probably the case that most people haven't seen them, but just the very fact of the video gives it a greater significance in language terms. How does that work, Jonah?
It's almost a little bit like a secret. You know, if someone tells you a secret, if someone tells you not to tell anyone else something, what's the first thing you do when you hear that information? It almost makes you more likely to tell someone. Same with a video that people say, well, don't watch this video or it's not appropriate. It's going to make a bunch of people go, wow, there must be something going on in this video that I need to see. And so it's almost drawn people to it like a moth to a flame.
Now, I don't know how much time you spend at the Wharton School of Business thinking about ethics and morality. Sorry, that was a cheap shot. But what do you think personally should be the policy for media organizations regarding these videos? Show them or not? Let people see them or censor them?
It's a very tough decision. I mean, this is an important media event. There's definitely a lot of things going on related to it. It is an important situation. Yet at the same time, by showing it, in some ways, you're giving in to the goals that ISIS has. You can think of ISIS almost as a brand that a few months ago nobody knew about. It's not a brand in the same way that dish soap might be a brand or Tide or The Gap might be a brand. But in the same way, it's sort of an upstart that people don't know a lot about, and they're trying to raise awareness for their cause and their mission. And so they very astutely used video to do this, and this is just one example where showing the video, because it's newsworthy, is actually driving attention to their cause.
Well, by that logic, and it certainly wasn't his intention, Ray Rice is the brand for domestic violence and assaulting your girlfriend in an elevator because of that video. We understood the event in one way when we saw part of the video. Then when we saw the rest of the video, it's transformed it again. How do you evaluate this event and the video consequences?
I mean, you've seen that small, that 5 or 10 second clip replayed again and again and again. And while before that clip came out, people had some sense of what happened, after it, it's very hard to see it as some sort of gray area. You see exactly what happened. You see that lack of remorse in his behavior. And right away, it becomes much harder for people to believe that there's some sort of mistake, that there's not a problem there, and that he deserves to be playing football.
The bizarre thing, though, is that that video would have us believe that in this society, we actually don't tolerate domestic violence. When if you look at law enforcement statistics and conviction rates, we actually do tolerate domestic violence, oddly enough.
Statistics are numbers on a page. I do a lot of research in this area and do often activities in my class where you ask students to present a case that makes people want to change their behavior. Students often go to statistics. They say, if I want to convince someone, I'm going to use statistics as the way to do it. If people see those numbers or hear those numbers, they'll be much more likely to take action. But stories and emotion and video conveys both is a much more powerful way to convince people to do something or not to do it. In this case, you can put all the statistics you want about domestic violence being a big problem or not being a problem, But you see 10 seconds of that video and you feel very strongly that it must be at least somewhat of a problem in the United States. And so numbers do one thing, but video and emotion has a much more powerful effect on behavior.
Well, and one of our smart listeners chimes in with this. Historically, white Americans didn't act or care particularly about the civil rights movement until they saw the dogs, hoses, and baton beatings on TV. Then what was common was no longer acceptable. Do you think there's a correlation between the Ray Rice video, what's going on with the ISIS videos and their impact, and those civil rights videos of the hosings and beatings?
Certainly. I mean, the visual image, even just a photo, is more powerful in arousing emotion than text. And video goes even further. It adds another dimension to that experience. And so over the course of history, whether it's photos or videos, all these types of modalities have aroused our emotions and changed the debate around a number of issues.
On any level, just looking at the consequences of this video and how it's overwhelmed the event in the Ray Rice case, are they victims together in the sense that it's going to be much harder for them to resolve whatever domestic problems they have in their own family going forward because of all of this video fallout? There's no escaping the fact that this is not a ordinary domestic violence situation anymore.
Certainly. I mean, this is a much simpler case, but, you know, we all have moments in our own lives that we'd rather not remember. We all have, you know, hopefully not domestic violence disputes, but, you know, arguments with a spouse or a friend. We may act or say something that we wish we didn't do. And if that moment is captured and bottled and put out there as the moment that defines who we are, I think it would be very hard for us to solve whatever problem or issue it came up with. And sure, you know, it's not as extreme as the situation that happened with Ray Rice, but it's got to be much more difficult to solve that situation because that is the piece, that's the little bit of information that everyone uses to think about this situation.
Is that where we're evolving towards, a society where essentially you have to behave in a way where you think about the consequences of anything you do being caught on video, because the proliferation of cameras mean that almost anything you do could be caught on camera, right?
It's both the proliferation of cameras and the ability of the web to diffuse information very quickly and hold that information for a long period of time. Everyone says, you know, be careful what you post on social media. It never forgets. And sure, you know, if a photo goes up of you online or even something that you write, it can sit there forever and have a big impact on behavior. So I don't think it's just video per se. But if you look at political campaigns now, people talk about there's not a moment with the candidate being off. Every single moment can be captured, recorded, and disseminated to a large set of the population very quickly. And because of that, there's no just, you know, here's a campaign stop, 5 minutes on, the rest of the time being off. You know, the whole discussion of the one percenters and a lot of those discussions that came out of the Mitt Romney campaign was because of a video that caught him engaging in a behavior that he might have liked to forget that he engaged in. And so these certainly have the ability to change popular discourse and political campaigns.
Absolutely. And I've just managed to find the webcam in your office, Jonah, and that's a completely ridiculous hat you're wearing. I'm going to disavow everything you've said for the last 8 minutes.
You know, it doesn't show my best side, that's for sure.
Jonah Berger, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Jonah Berger is professor at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business. He's the author of Contagious, Why Things Catch On.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.